All right, I'm now joined by the ETF Jedi, the ETF guru, maestro, Dave Nottig. Dave, what should we call you? I feel like you need a nickname.
How about just Dave? Dave's fine.
Well, more formally, you are a chief investment officer and director of research at ETF Flows. How's everything going there so far?
It's been a blast. I've been here since really right at the Inside ETFs conference I joined. And for those that don't know, Flows is just the umbrella company where ETF Trends and ETF Database live. It's just sort of the holding company. So mostly you people can find me at ETF Trends. That's where I've been writing.
All right. So I've asked everyone else this week, I'll ask you as well, how are you holding up with everything going on with the coronavirus? Are you working from home? What's the situation on the ground there locally? Tell us your situation.
Well, so my personal situation is actually very little change in my day-to-day life because I've been working from home since 1997. So I'm pretty well set up, if you will, for that. The biggest change has been that, you know, my kids are home. My grown kids are home doing online college and online high school. And my wife's a teacher. She's home teaching remotely. And my daughter's girlfriend's with us as well. So we have a nice sort of quarantine family of five. And it's actually been pretty okay. You know, in the outer world, I live in rural Massachusetts. You know, we definitely do have cases. You know, we have, our local hospital has like 20 beds, right? So, I mean, it's a very small environment and starting to get a little overwhelmed already. So doing our bit by staying in place.
And are you under a formal stay at home order?
I don't even know. They're not like putting roadblocks up like they are in Spain and making people prove that they went to the grocery store. So we're still getting out to go for hikes and stuff. But, you know, we can do that because we are so rural. I can get out and go for a 3-mile run and not see a person. So it's pretty easy.
Well, good. No, I'm glad to hear everything is going well. So look, I thought you and I would cover what's probably been the biggest story in ETFs over the past month, which is bond ETFs and of course, bond ETF discounts. And let's maybe start with this news last week that the Fed has handpicked BlackRock to manage their corporate bond buying program, which includes corporate bond ETFs. And of course, we all know BlackRock is the world's largest ETF provider. By the way, they offer the largest corporate bond ETF, LQD. So this did look a little bit like the fox in the chicken coop. Now, I know last week you called for transparency on this. You said BlackRock should just put everything out in the open. And on Friday, we did learn BlackRock would not be earning fees on any money invested in their own ETFs. What was your take on all this? Because I think we would both agree the optics here certainly weren't the best.
Yeah, and look, I get that this totally looks like the fox in the hen house, but I think you have to ask yourself the question, what is the alternative, right? Let's take for granted that it's a good idea that the Fed wants to put a bid on the bottom of the corporate bond market. And I think that is a reasonable thing to do, particularly in the liquid space. Real questions about what's going to happen when all the triple Bs roll out of liquid space. But, if the Fed is going to do this, how should they do it? What we don't want the Fed to do is to go out and build a bond desk in the middle of all this. That would be a terrible idea because, this is a real expertise. It is a dealer-to-dealer, buyer-to-seller market. So you have to literally know who has what kind of inventory, their systems and risk management processes they need in place. This is not child's play. This is complex financial management. And BlackRock is, I think, inarguably probably the best in the world at it. Now, are there huge information issues here about, they're going to know what bonds are being bought on one side, yet on the other side, they're running active and passive funds. Sure. Will they put the, at least the optics of, the right firewalls in place? Of course they will. So I'm not sure that there was much alternative here. I think we should point out that, BlackRock's also the one that managed the TARP program, right? They've been to this rodeo before and not all that long ago. If the Fed's going to do this, it's hard for me to see who else they would have picked to do it. It's not the kind of thing you're going to hand off to a consortium of 20 bond desks and get it. I mean, that would just be chaos. So yeah, optics are bad, but I'm not sure I see a better alternative.
All that said, I mean, do you think this is unfair? And I think about everything that's been written on the big three, especially in the ETF space, right? iShares, Vanguard, and State Street, and how they dominate the ETF business. Do you view this as an unfair advantage for BlackRock?
Well, you know, we don't know right now what the end state of this program is going to look like. They're explicitly prohibited from buying any ETF at a premium. LQD has been trading at a premium ever since this got announced, right? It went from a fairly big discount to a fairly big premium as people piled, you know, last week, in the trailing 6 days, we've seen $6 billion flow into LQD, right? So everybody's trying to front run this buying program. That means they can't buy LQD. And there are actually not very many competitive ETFs. It's not like there's a big laundry list of highly liquid, large liquid bond ETFs out there for them to choose from. You get LQD and then everybody else, and it drops off a cliff in terms of tradability.
One thing that I saw that you mentioned last week was that BlackRock should put a bid on every bond issue that's out there that underlies these major corporate bond indexes. That way you actually get a price to print. Why would that be helpful? Maybe this dovetails into the discussion on bond ETFs.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the reasons we saw this perceived disconnect in the ETF market really had nothing to do with what was going on in the bond market and had everything to do with how bond NAVs are struck. And those are struck usually, I mean, in a lot of ways, but if you're managing and against an index, you're going to take whatever the index provider says that the bonds are worth, because the last thing you want to do is to make your own guess about what an untraded bond is worth. It's very different than, say, Bloomberg's guess on what that is. And now you've created both tracking error and bad pricing. So you're going to naturally just take whatever price is given to you by an index provider. And if it's not being given to you by an index provider, you have your own pricing committee that helps you set that NAV. And the problem is, you know, 80% of the bond market in the corporate space doesn't trade every day. So what do you do with those 80% of bonds? One thing that would help would be to trade all of them, because when it's traded recently, you have a really good sense of what the fair value is, right? If it traded at 3 o'clock, you can be pretty sure you understand what it's worth at 3:15. If it traded in February, you have a much harder time. So if BlackRock came in and literally just bought a one lot, you know, of every corporate issue that's out there, yeah, would it be chaos? Yes, but every one of those bonds would have a real price, and you would see all of the NAVs and all of the prices on ETFs snap right back to the middle.
Okay, so this is perfect. This is a perfect segue into the bond ETF discount story, which I feel like this has been garnering all the headlines over the past several weeks. And just to take a step back, the gist here is we saw a number of bond ETFs that were trading below that net asset value, including some very popular bond ETFs, right? BND, AGG, LQD, which you mentioned. And of course, this in turn brought out the ETF fearmongers in force, right? We started seeing some victory lappers saying ETF somehow broke. I guess I'm just going to hand this over to you to explain, and then we can go from there. You were just explaining, you know, getting a print on bond prices. But for the layman, just walk through what was going on here with these bond ETF discounts.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, the cash bond market in the peak of this, you know, over the last 2 weeks, the cash bond market where actual bonds were trading between dealers, institutions, speculators, you know, all the people in the bond market, really the liquidity dried up. And so if you went out there to, say, you know, get rid of a $5 million allocation you had to a high yield, you know, Orange County, California muni bond, you literally couldn't get anybody to give you any bid at all. Right. Meaning that you would pick up the phone, you would ask, and this, it's effectively how it works. I mean, it mostly happens through Bloomberg messages, but effectively you're picking up the phone, you're calling the guy, you know, who usually will take your munis off your hand, and you say, hey, what will you give me for this? And he says, I'm not buying. Right. So when you literally have no floor on the price, what does that person do? Well, they immediately say, well, God, I have no liquidity at all. What can I sell? I need to raise cash. I've got margin calls. I'm reallocating. What you sell is what's liquid. What's liquid is the ETF. So if you had those positions, you dumped them because you couldn't get a bid on the actual bonds themselves. So that means that the price in the market was the price at which point, you know, buyers and sellers and authorized participants were willing to say, okay, look, we have no idea what these bonds are worth right now because nobody's buying. Our best guess is it's about 10% below what you think it is. And that's what prints, right? That's what that trades at. Now, at the end of the day, somebody still has to go through for all those bonds that really didn't trade this time and still come up with a price. And the way most of those things work is they take the last traded price and they adjust it based on what they've seen in the market. And those adjustments are generally very laggy. They take days, if not weeks, to take new information into account because they're trying to run a conservative net model. They don't want NAV to go up and down 10% a day. They want it to be fairly stable because that's historically what bonds look like. In this market, that's not what bonds look like. So you had this old, stale, stable, model-based NAV, and you had very real-world, very responsive, with lots of money behind it pricing on the ETF. That's the disconnect.
So is it your belief that ETFs were operating as price discovery vehicles?
100%. It's 100%. And you can go ETF by ETF and you can show exactly where and why, you know, these things were correct. You know, I did this in the heat of the crisis. I was posting Bloomberg screen after Bloomberg screen on Twitter, you know, and people were saying, why is the, you know, this is so broken. And I'd be like, is it really broken? Look at the last print in this bond that's in there, which was down 20% or something like that. And now you're going to tell me the rest of the portfolio is worth 20% more than that, even though this one bond that did trade printed down 20%. Like, you could prove it over and over again. It's just exhausting. And there's, you know, tens of thousands of corporate issues out there. So chasing each individual one to point out and say, hey, you know what? 12% of this portfolio did trade and it did trade down 10%. So maybe down 10% is the right price for the portfolio.
What about people that would say something like, if you use bond mutual funds, you know you're always going to get executed at NAV. And perhaps that's a more fair model. And I know there's a lot of dissection. Actually, I think you wrote a piece on Vanguard in particular. They present an interesting case study because they offer a share class or an ETF share class of their mutual funds. So you can, right, you can look at both of them, right? But what about people who say, well, look, if you transact in the mutual fund, you know you're always going to get executed at NAV. That's a more fair model.
Well, so that the first part of that sentence is true, right? If you're in a mutual fund, you will get transacted at NAV. It's deeply unfair, right? If you were somebody who was holding BNDs on, you know, going into the day when BND traded to a 5% perceived discount, if you sold your mutual fund shares at NAV that day, if you pulled the trigger at 3 o'clock and put in that order and you got that 5% above trading price value for your shares in that Vanguard bond fund, you actually engaged in theft against the people who were still in the fund, because the way you got that excessive price is by, you know, them drawing down a line of credit to give you back your money. And then the next morning, the portfolio manager had to sell something to pay down that line of credit. What do they sell? The most liquid stuff they could. Therefore, BND's portfolio becomes marginally junkier. And guess what? Their act of selling also then printed a bunch of those bonds. So lo and behold, the next day, the NAV comes down. So, you know, you're essentially front running against the people who are being buy and hold investors. You know, conversely, if you happen to think this was a great buying opportunity and at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you put in a buy order, you overpaid by 5%. That doesn't seem fair either.
You know, as you talk through this, anytime we get into the mechanics of ETFs and mutual funds as well, and we start talking about things like NAV and authorized participants and arbitrage, I certainly understand that it's not always immediately intuitive. I do think this can get a bit complex, but at a basic level, we all know ETFs are trading real time during the day. Mutual funds aren't. And so I guess the question I have is, to me, it doesn't seem like rocket science to understand the ETF is going to better reflect reality just because of that, because it is trading during the day. If you understand nothing else, you know that it is. You have people that are putting capital to work. They have a financial incentive, in trading the product to try to get as closely to the fair value as possible. Why do you think this causes so much confusion?
Well, because I think it is non-intuitive. If you're coming to this from a mutual fund world, you've been told over and over again that NAV is fair value, right? So you've learned to accept that. NAV isn't fair value. NAV is a calculation, which in the bond space is based on estimates. And I think that that's really hard for people to grasp. The example that I've been using that I think has given a lot of people an aha moment is, you know, if you go to Zillow and you look up your house and it tells you it's worth $500,000, You shouldn't believe that number in the midst of a housing crisis. But if the guy next to you has to fire sale his house for 50% less than he bought it for last year, your Zillow number is not immediately going to go down by 50%. It's going to take months for Zillow to recognize that your local market has changed. And yeah, your house is probably not worth what you thought it was worth. That's exactly what's going on in the bond market, right? A bond pricing service is nothing more than fancy Zillow.
All right, there was one specific ETF I did want to ask you about, and it was actually one I was a bit critical of, the iShares Short Maturity Bond ETF. The ticker symbol on that is NEAR, N-E-A-R. And basically what happened here is they suspended cash redemptions sort of midstream during the day, and the ETF immediately fell to a pretty sizable discount, especially for a fund owning short-term securities. Do you want to just briefly explain cash creations and redemptions?
I was going to say, do you think this
was a misstep by iShares?
It's actually not really what happened either, right? So, you know, the day that this happened, which was, I think March 18th, right, when it traded down to a pretty significant discount and then came all the way back, right? This rumor, if you will, like some market makers heard from somebody on a desk that, hey, you know what? We're going to go from cash creates to in-kind. And that freaked the market out. It didn't actually happen. Like zero creations and redemptions were done in-kind. Period. None. So it never actually happened. It was sort of a misstep in communication, not an actual change. If they'd actually changed it, yeah, it would have been a dumb way to do it. But that's not actually what happened. This is really a communications problem. But to answer your question directly, you know, most ETFs are in kind in the sense that if you want to get more shares of the ETF, you deliver a basket of things. And if you want to get rid of some shares of ETF, you get a basket of things back. And most bond funds do work that way, but many don't. Many will allow you to do a creation or redemption for cash, meaning I give you $5 million and you give me 20,000 shares of the ETF. And then there's some variable fee that you're going to pay based on how hard they think it's going to be for them to do the transactions to actually go buy the basket of things that they need. And statutorily, that's capped at 2%. Most people are now up at the 2%, as you might imagine, if they're still doing cash creations and redemptions. When you do that, you make it very easy for the AP to keep it trading close to fair value because they don't have to worry about whether the market's tanking or not, which is why you saw NEAR and before and after this trading spot on fair value, which is right back to what it's doing. We really had like a day and a half of this being out of whack, and then it came right back in.
But to be clear, was NEAR down because of the rumors that were out there, or was this price discovery, or both? It was because of the rumors.
It was because, and I don't want to say rumor as in like this didn't happen. Somebody actually heard something from somebody, but it wasn't like in a formal process where, you know, BlackRock issued a statement saying, you know, as of 12:34 on March 18th, we are now no longer doing cash creations and redemptions. This was communication between somebody at BlackRock and somebody at some market maker or somebody in the middle getting, you know, misspeaking, getting the idea wrong, but it didn't actually happen. I actually confirmed that this did not actually happen. There haven't been any in-kind redemptions out of NEAR.
Dave, going back to the Fed facility to purchase corporate bonds and bond ETFs, I'm just curious, if that was never established, what do you think would have happened in the bond mutual fund space?
If we had a cascading event here where the bond market was getting worse and worse and worse, which luckily seems to have not be the case now, what would happen is exactly what happened with Third Avenue Mutual Funds 5 years ago, which is, you know, you have this cycle of people, you know, rushing to redeem out of their bond mutual fund because they think the bottom's falling out. So a ton of people get out at NAV. Then the next day they have to go sell a bunch of stuff. And then that drives the NAV down more. And you get this vicious cycle. And eventually what happens is the portfolio can no longer sustain the redemptions because the underlying market is not liquid enough. And you have to shut the mutual fund for redemptions, which is exactly what happened with Third Avenue and their junk bond fund and basically took down the company. Right. So there is this problem in mutual funds that in fast-moving markets, they can get bound up to the point they can't do redemptions and everybody will have to get in line and wait for them to liquidate the portfolio. Nobody likes that. The great thing about the ETF structure is no matter how bad things can get, generally there's a price out there and you don't have to close it for redemptions. You basically can't.
Okay, so on that note, and before I let you go, and I asked Laura and Todd the same question, give me your letter grade for the performance of ETFs during this recent sell-off? And if you want to break out equity and fixed income ETFs, that's fine. But how would you grade ETFs over the past month?
Well, you know, people are going to call me a corporate tool for saying this, but I give them a straight A because they've done exactly what they're supposed to do. We have not actually had any breaks in the structure. We haven't had, you know, flash crash misprints where 10 people get executed 50% away from fair value. We have not had none of that. The only thing that we have seen in the ETF industry throughout this whole thing is a huge amount of inflows and some price dislocations, which have really highlighted what's wrong with bond pricing services. Now, I know a lot of people aren't going to believe me on that, but that's actually what's broken here. And if we want to talk about regulatory follow-up and where we come out of this, it's bond market structure and bond pricing services. Those are the things that need to be addressed.
Well, Dave, so great having you back on the podcast. And I meant to tell you, I absolutely love all the writing you're doing now at ETF Trends. I also love that you're tweeting a lot more now. So definitely keep that up. And again, really great reconnecting. Thank you.
Yeah, great being here, Nate. Keep it up.
Thank you. That was Dave Noddick, Chief Investment Officer and Director of Research at ETF Flows.